Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast.
This week's podcast features Lauren Tucker from Kiss the Ground, an organization that is working to educate and inspire both the public and private sectors about protecting and conserving our soil. And not only that, but they are working to help reverse climate change by carbon farming. And Lauren comes on the show today to share a little bit more about what Kiss the Ground is doing, about what you can do, and we get into compost pretty deep. So join us today for a super inspiring conversation about the literal ground beneath our feet. And I hope that y'all walk away from this with a few ideas about how you can get in touch with the earth and with the soil, and how you can make tiny shifts that have a big impact on the regenerative aspects of our society and of our world. I also want to give a huge thank you and shout out to our two newest Patreon supporters, Heather and Isabel. Thank you so much for showing us your gratitude and support. If you're interested in supporting us, it's awesome. You don't just throw money at us. We actually give you something else, a little thank you in return. So every month over on Patreon, we are posting a ritual you can do, or a guided meditation, or some sort of online class, a little lesson about something to do with connecting with your intuition or connecting with the earth and how to really live consciously guided by nature and intuition. If you're interested in this, then check out Patreon, patreon.com/dreamfreedombeauty, and see if there's something there that you like that, you know, it's, you feel is worth giving us a little support and getting something in return. And we are so grateful for it. Thank you. We're your hosts, sisters Natalie
and Lizzie Ross.
Dream Freedom Beauty is a podcast for free spirits who yearn to connect deeply with their intuition and manifest their dream lives in harmony with the earth.
You can find the podcast show notes at dreamfreedombeauty.com.
Welcome to the show, Lauren. It's so awesome to have you here to talk about soil and to hear about what y'all are doing over at Kiss the Ground.
Awesome. It's great to be here.
Awesome. And as we've been doing, I want to invite our listeners, and I want to invite each of you, Lauren and Lizzie, to just take a deep breath. Close your eyes if you're not driving. If you're driving, keep your eyes open and just find yourself in your body. Take another deep breath. Feel that air coming in, feeding your lungs with that oxygen and taking away the carbon dioxide and anything else that needs to be released in this moment on the out breath. Just invite in peace and ease and whatever other intentions you have for your day. And if either of you, Lizzie or Lauren, would like to add anything, please feel free to. And when you're ready, just let me know. And you know what? Actually, I'm getting inspired right now since we're talking about soil today. Just want to invite you to feel from the base of your body a beautiful root coming out of the base of your body and going into the earth and kissing the ground and going through the soil. Let that root go deeper through the earth's crust, through all those layers, the magma, molten lava, and deeper and deeper and deeper, and let that root go all the way into the center of the earth. So you feel it hooked in the center of our planet. Say a little hello to Earth down there. And let that energy from the center of the earth come back up through all those layers, up through the soil, up through the building you're in, and all the way up through your feet and through your base, and all the way up to your heart, and let it expand out from there, blessing yourself and blessing your day and blessing the world. And take another deep breath just to bring it all home. Be present here in the moment and centered. And when you're ready, let's begin.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you, Natalie.
You're welcome. It's like you can never get too much grounding in your life and centering.
Amen to that.
Yeah. So cool. Well, it's exciting to have you here. And for anyone who hasn't heard of Kiss the Ground, y'all are out in California and you're an organization that you are representing today, Lauren. And you are tackling, I don't even know if tackling is the right word. You are addressing and providing solutions and potential shifts that we can all make to address things like climate change and like the depletion of the nutrients in our soil and of our disconnection of humans and the earth and where our food comes from and how important it is for us all to be aware of ourselves as the earth. So this is such a interesting organization you have going on. And can you tell me what is like the main focus of your organization right now?
Totally. Well, we were founded 3 years ago because Ryland Englehart, who's one of the owner managers of Cafe Gratitude, which is a all organic vegan restaurant on the West Coast, he was at a conference and he heard a panel of scientists speak. There were four scientists and they were all speaking about the viability of human life on Earth due to climate change. And they were all painting a pretty grim picture of this is bad, this is really bad. And the fourth panelist to speak said, look, it's possible to take carbon out of the atmosphere with this age-old technology called photosynthesis. And the way we do agriculture and the way we manage lands can take carbon out of the atmosphere. And Ryland came back to Venice, which is where we live, and was super inspired and said, I finally know what my life is about. You know, I've been championing organic and healthy food and eating for over 10 years, and this is it. This is what my life's about. So he grabbed his childhood friend, Finian Makepeace, who's a local musician, and we all started gathering in Ryland's living room. And there were some weeks five of us and some weeks 40 of us, and filmmakers, marketing professionals, gardeners, and we all got super inspired and we were like, we have to do something. So what came out was an organization, and we've spent the last couple of years focusing on media. So the biggest thing we're working on right now is releasing a documentary, a full-length documentary on this topic, and it's in conjunction with Josh Tickell and Rebecca Tickell, a company called Big Picture Ranch. So that's the biggest thing we're looking at. And right now the challenge is how do we make this documentary cause some sort of real on the ground change, because documentaries are great and we can all get inspired. And then we go back to our kind of business as usual daily lives and what really changes. And so we're looking at creating a purchasing guide, a really dynamic purchasing guide, so that when you see the documentary or when you get inspired about soil carbon sequestration and regenerative agriculture, there's actually a take action step for every person in their daily life. And then the next thing we're working on is we've spent the last couple of years really getting to know all the international organizations and all the incredible scientists and all the policymakers and so many people in this field who are working really hard. And so we're looking at where we can become consultants and connect pieces that aren't currently connected. So looking at what farmers really need to transition to regenerative ag, if it's funding or if it's just access to information or if it's access to markets. So we're spending the next year doing a lot of discovery work, as well as starting to to foray a little into consulting and see what it looks like to connect some of the dots that we've started to understand. Mm-hmm.
And what is the main focus of this documentary? Is it climate change or is it soil health? Like, what's the real, like, the thing?
Yeah, so the documentary, the main focus is climate change. You know, we like to term it the other half of the solution because, you know, in no way does soil carbon sequestration get us off the hook for reducing and cutting emissions. That has to happen and has to happen way faster than we're doing it. And renewables are a really key piece to that. But even if we were to cut all emissions tomorrow, if that were to ever happen, we still have all this carbon in the atmosphere. So the documentary is a full length, and our view is very much through climate change, but it also goes through the history of agriculture, how we got to chemical industrialized agriculture anyway. And then we follow several farmers who are really taking on regenerative ag and what they're doing and what their land looks like and what their successes look like. And, you know, our hope is that it leaves people with the idea that this is possible, that it's not just for hippies and backyard gardeners, that really large scale agriculture can transition to a series of healthy soil building practices.
Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned a couple times the term regenerative agriculture. And for our listeners who may not be familiar, could you give us a quick briefing on the difference between sustainable ag and regenerative ag?
Yeah, so this is kind of a hot topic because the international community itself, we don't have one agreed upon definition yet. The term was coined by Robert Rodale of Pennsylvania's Rodale Institute many years ago. I can't remember when he coined it, but he defined regenerative agriculture as beyond organic agriculture. So really looking to nature in almost a permaculture way, looking at nature's systems, how does nature work and how can we farm like nature does? And then you have a lot of different, we kind of have a lot of different camps of why we care about this term. So some of us are in the climate change camp, and so we're concerned about how healthy soil can sequester carbon. Some people are looking at regenerative agriculture probably in a very similar way to the way we would term sustainable, but some people are looking at it from the small farmer's perspective. So if I'm a smallholder farmer in India, for example, and I've become very dependent on a chemical company or a seed company that I have to pay every year for inputs, how can I kind of get off that train and start farming in such a way that I'm saving my own seed, that, you know, a certain percentage of my crops are being saved to make compost with. So I'm working with animals so that all my fertility and everything is coming from the land itself. So some people are concerned about regenerative ag more from the farmer's perspective of how they can be more autonomous. And then some of us, you know, really don't want to define it yet, because if we define it, there's a fear that it doesn't have the ability to become what it wants to become. Kind of a lot of thought that we don't yet know what regenerative agriculture is, and that's okay. Because on an ultimate level, the term is wanting to describe how we restore ecosystems where the byproduct of that is healthy food, clean water, healthy soil, you know, things that you would bring to market. But the first primary focus is, okay, we have a bunch of degraded land all over the world, and if we restore biodiversity, if we restore fertility, then sure, we're going to have food, but we're also going to have species, and we're going to have, you know, like cleaner water and cleaner soil and all these things. So yeah, there's kind of a vague definition, and then a lot of different things that people are excited about with regenerative ag. But our entrance is usually climate change, because that's, you know, what our core team, what, you know, keeps us up late at night and what we feel concerned about. Mm-hmm. But the thing I like about soil health in general, and that's kind of can be a baseline for what we're talking about with regenerative ag, is let's really keep the soil healthy and then everything else in the ecosystem will follow. But what I like,
yeah, you're talking about water quality, food quality, ecosystems, habitat strength, all tying into the strength of the soil. And I love that this, we're holding space for the definition of regenerative agriculture to emerge. These are the effects we want to see. It's sort of like an access consciousness definition of regenerative agriculture you've just given us. Like, what would it take for us to have agriculture that had these positive effects?
Totally.
We're open to anything. Yeah.
And I was just going to say, in my perspective, I want to offer this is, it's a shift from looking at the world in a straight line where you like, you know, it's like you're done with something, so you send it to the dump, to really looking at it in that circular or like spiral aspect of everything you do becomes something else. So let's shift how we do everything to be aligned with that, because that's what nature is and what it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that example is really clear in ecosystems and in closed system farming that could be described as sustainable or regenerative, where cow poop gets pecked apart by chickens and becomes great fertilizer, et cetera, et cetera. So kudos to that dream.
Yeah, there's one other kind of simple way to describe it that I want to bring in, and that's for a long time, we've been operating in a degenerative context. So nature is here to serve us. We have this thought where a lot of farmers and land managers have a thought that the land naturally degrades over time, which isn't true. It's just the way we manage it. And we mine land or we mine resources for financial capital gain. That's kind of the definition of degenerative. And then our initial response to that was like, whoa, we have to do something. And that's where sustainability came. And that could be described as I log a tree over here, I plant one over there, like one for one. I take it out, I put it in. So it's more of a loop, like how do we solve this by always, you know, giving as much as we take. But what we didn't conceptualize or what sustainability doesn't capture is that right now we're trying to sustain an already degraded system. And what we really need to create is regeneration. So it's ecosystem restoration. It's how do we work with the land so that it's functioning in such a way that there's more and more abundance over time. How do we know when to step in and when to step back as managers and stewards of the land so that, you know, it can kind of reach optimum potential.
And we're talking about a generation of people who have largely lost the knowledge they might have inherited from the farmers of past generations because we've had things like the so-called Green Revolution. So some of the work you all are doing
and the Green Revolution, I just want to interject for anyone who doesn't know, is not a, like, go green, be sustainable. It's like, that's when we introduced chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides and chemical herbicides that just started to wreak havoc and take us to that degenerative route. So just, But go ahead. Sorry, just had to clarify.
Yeah. It's cool too, because if you step back a couple generations and look at the practices people were using then, what they're doing has a lot of potential to be applied to what we're doing now and have regenerative effects, not only in the soil and the ecosystems and the food that we are growing, but also in our economy, which you guys touch on. Kiss the Ground has mentioned that America needs young farmers right now.
Totally. Yeah, there's this really incredible book that I suggest. It's downloadable as a PDF, but it's called Regenerative Enterprise. And it talks about not only regenerative ag, but regenerative business models and how we look at and kind of map entire communities so that we're creating them in such a way that everyone is experiencing regeneration. So yeah, there's certainly a lot here, and it's a big rabbit hole, which is really exciting.
Right. This is a huge opportunity for so much innovation and transformation, and to like really, like, we've been living, I love how you said we've been living this degenerative way. And so like we don't even know what it looks like to be fully regenerative, and how freaking like juicy and nourishing and like beautiful and fulfilling that can be when we, mm-hmm. you know, like we don't even have that window. There's like, it's like covered, like you can't even see that that window's there until you start digging into this. So that's, we'll put that link in our show notes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because in our current context, our first response to hearing about soil carbon sequestration or regenerative ag is, okay, how do I purchase that? And so, you know, we're working on a purchasing guide, but if we're really to step back and look at the potential of a regenerative context for all life, we don't yet know what that means. And so like the response, the purchasing response is within our current context. And what we need is to let something emerge. It's like, whoa, let's digest this concept and then allow creative ideas from all over the world to emerge, because
totally.
We don't yet know, you know, what society could be like or what life could be
like. This is an international issue, and it's so complex that the only thing we can do is take the next step right now and see what grows from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, I know that a lot of people struggle with analysis paralysis and just straight overwhelm when it comes to even processing the reality of climate change or the overload of carbon in our atmosphere, and bringing it down to the next right step right now is so beautiful. So I love that, you know, even though 20-somethings working in the city may not be able to go start a farm and be sequestering carbon, you're working on a really tangible guide that will be an accessible tool in the moment for people to use when they're making choices.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we look at climate change, to me, it's a crisis of identity or a crisis of eco-consciousness. Like, certainly there's very tangible scientific choices. The science shows us what's going on in the atmosphere and with the environment. We know that there are technologies that exist that can get us off oil. Like, there are some very tangible things. We know that every day as consumers, we have choices, but on a very, like, if we were to pull back to the deeper level, to like a more basic level almost, it's a crisis of not understanding our place in the ecosystem. Like, we are part of nature. We are part of this one ecosystem that planet Earth can be considered. And in a way, we've lost our thought of how we participate correctly or in alignment with our ecosystem. And so it's, I really love to talk about, like, let's redefine what it means to be human. And if we can get to that, then maybe we can solve climate change, because it's like we have generations that have no connection to what it means to positively participate with land. Or it's not that the sun and the salamander and the plant and the human all serve the same role, but we all serve different roles that make up this one whole. And I think we're really like far removed from that in our daily lives.
Yeah, I think it's a degenerated concept of humanity that we have. So tell us some of the touchstones of humanity that have emerged for you as the Kiss the Ground team has been working on redefining our identity as humans.
In five words or less. No, just kidding.
Well, it brings me, the first thought that crosses my mind is it took us a long time to figure out what our mission statement was. And 3 years ago, we started with something like, our mission is to restore soil all over the world, you know, for human health and planetary health, and like something very sciencey. And we just, for the last year, have been working with an incredible advisor. And he led us through a process of figuring out our why, or like what's in our hearts, and let the mission emerge from there. And our current mission is we can do this. And it speaks to, I think it speaks to what humanity needs right now. It's like most of us feel totally overwhelmed by climate change. And, you know, all of our friends sitting in a living room and then now sitting in a garage office in Venice, our Kiss the Ground team, what we realized was, oh, there's actually a way out. It's very tangible. And in our hearts, we got inspired and hopeful that we can do this. We can work on, you know, a path forward. We can work on what is regenerative. We can help farmers transition. We can help inspire our friends and hopefully the world. And so starting that place, I think we all need that spark of inspiration in our hearts that can allow us to like look at this big impending climate change doom. And then through this journey in the last 3 years, I've just met so many people who are doing the most incredible things, like farmers who are working with compost in new ways, or people working in the inner city planting gardens everywhere, or people looking at how we redefine our economic system through a regenerative lens. And it's just like every day I find someone new and I'm just overwhelmed by human potential. And so I think that in this idea of redefining what it means to be human, it's like first we all need hope that it's possible, and then we start connecting to all these people who are each following their own hearts. And then from there, we just see like this blossoming all over. I don't know if that answers the question.
That makes sense.
That's a great.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that points to something that just kind of came up again and again for me through my time spent in science education and in getting 2 degrees in science, which was we have so many answers and solutions for things scientifically, and we can like do the math on like, here's what needs to happen. But there's that huge disconnect. And what we need is that spirit and that hope and that drive and that ambition and that heart. And it's that heart that we need to move forward with and put our heart and our minds hand to hand. And then now I'm seeing like a little heart and a little mind with hands holding hands. It's like we they really need to move forward together. We can't just be the mind, and we can't let the cynicism or the overwhelm take control. We need to allow that heart energy in and that spirit in. And that's what I mean. That's what we talk about here, is like we are earth and spirit, and how do we? That's part of, that's like our little piece of the pie of like redefining what it means to be human, is like, we are spirit, the earth is spirit, the soil is spirit, we're also physical, so like let's connect on all these levels and see where that takes us and like go forward in that. And so something I'm interested in is like, what is key for that hope? Like, have you been in a place where you felt hopeless about it, and what shifted that for you?
Totally. I think the key is community, and communities are going to solve climate change. People aren't, because unless we're surrounded with people who can pick us up when we're feeling low, or with people who can help us figure out the pieces we can't figure out, we're not going to hack this thing. And so I've been super lucky to be surrounded by friends and community, and even global community, that are innovative and believe it's possible. And so it helps me keep going in my daily life. Yeah, it's just being surrounded by people who are constantly iterating on the same concepts and feeling similarly helps a lot. There's someone there to you know, say, yeah, we can really dig up your front lawn and grow food. Like, you don't have to do it alone. Or there's someone there to say, yeah, you can figure out how to lease an electric car. Like, you got this. But without that community, it's very easy to say like, oh, this is overwhelming. Let me just go to work and kind of do the status quo. And there's also something to be said for bringing in everyone. I think that a lot of these conversations, whether it's in the environmental world or whether it's in the consciousness world or the yoga world or any of them, we can become really siloed. And like, to really solve problems on a community level, on a global level, we need everyone, because everyone brings such different tools and thinking and pieces to the puzzle. And if we were to look at the current election and kind of the current state of the US and the divisions, the crisis is that we're not figuring out ways to include everyone in consciousness shifts, or, you know, something really exciting happens in your community or in your group of friends. Like, how do you include everyone in that? And the more we can figure out that inclusion, the faster we're going to be able to hack, you know, a beautiful future.
So tell us, in your worldly wisdom, how do we include those people we feel so separate and different from? Do you have any ideas?
I mean, it's going to sound cheesy, but kind of the baseline is love.
totally, though.
And, you know, how do we approach everyone not with preaching and just with listening? Listening is really important. I also really like what I love about our work is I can talk about climate change. I can talk about healthy food. I can talk about water holding capacity in drought times. I can talk about farmers making more money. All these things apply. And so I can be inclusive to anyone because there's a way to look at every angle of it. And I don't have to hammer home, I care about climate change or I care about consciousness shift. And I don't have to approach, you know, someone in the small town that I grew up in with, hey, what I do for a living is redefine what it means to be human. Like, I can talk about healthy food.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, people everywhere can relate to that.
Let me tell you how to be a human. Yeah.
But yeah, I think the first key, and it's super obvious, but it's like listening and love, because everyone has something of value to bring. And when we forget that, when we just move into like preaching mode, then, you know, there's no way to reach inclusion.
Yeah, walls go up. And I guess another thing here that one of my peers, and also she's a teacher of mine of sorts, she says, get curious. You know, that's how you move through your own walls of judgment and just get curious about, because, you know, we're all people. It's like we all have these needs. We all breathe the air. We all eat the nutrients from the food that grew in the soil. It's like, okay, there's, you know, we have these baseline similarities. Curiosity and love and listening can be the roads into weaving that new collective, that new unity that allows us to all be different and yet together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recently heard someone talking about we're in the age of the polymath. Uh-huh. That term has been really sticking with me, but just this idea that we're strongest and able to solve things the fastest when we source from our greater community and when we include like way diverse voices. Right.
And even in like in a soil, it's like looking at a healthy ecosystem. It has a diversity of microorganisms and macroorganisms and the right diversity of nutrients. It's like, okay, then let's be a diversity of perspectives. But something that's really keeps coming up in my mind to ask about, especially in relation to the whole Kiss the Ground organization and your mission and everything, and you touched on this a little bit, but I want to go deeper, is what, you know, it does take, you mentioned it takes all of us. Like, it does take all of us. This isn't something that, like, those guys in the tower are going to solve the problems of climate change and soil depletion and all that. It's like we have to do that. It's all of us together that are part of this. And whether or not we're the ones, like, at the power plant creating the emissions, or the ones turning on the light and using the electricity that power plant created for us or harnessed for us. And so, like, what else can we do as individuals? So say someone's, okay, they've got hope now, like, now what? It's like, okay, what do I do with it? And you're creating a consumer guide, but what, like, what else?
Yeah. We've been trying to figure out for years what our, like, index card of five things you can do is. And we finally said, it's impossible to create this. And if you were to look at our social media right now, every week we're releasing a quote-unquote way, because our name, Kiss the Ground, comes from a Rumi poem, which is, there are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. So every week we're kind of focusing on and sharing another way that either we've come up with, or one of our advisors, or, you know, members has come up with. And they're diverse. It's like, learn about mushrooms. That's this week's way. Learn about fungi. And maybe there's something there for you. Maybe you'll just read about it and say, hey, that's cool. Or maybe you'll start growing mushrooms in your closet, or maybe you'll figure out how to create fungally dominated compost, if that's, like, the direction you want to take it. During Thanksgiving week, we released something called Have Conversations with Your Family. And we did a series of cartoons talking about how to talk to your family about climate change.
That was really funny, because I just want to interject it, because it said, like, how to come out to your family about it. That's just so funny. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. You know, you can compost, you can get to know your farmer, like, really get to know your farmer, like, who's the most local person to you that grows food. You know, you can get excited about, I don't know, you can get excited about electric cars, and you can get excited about solar, and you can get really excited about making the investment case for farmers to transition. Or maybe you love wine and you start to learn about soil health through the way wine tastes different in different soil areas. Or it's kind of, like, endless.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You know, it could be as simple as, like, go take 10 minutes, breathe in nature. Like, maybe you're not even to meditating, but, like, just go take a walk, or, like, notice that there's trees in your neighborhood if you live in a city. Like, nature's everywhere. And a lot of times when we do public speaking in cities, people are like, this is great, you're talking about soil health, but we live in the city. I was like, what do you think we're standing on? Like, it's everywhere. This is the skin of the earth. So yeah, the short answer is, I wish there was one way, because it would be a much simpler call to action, but it's kind of exciting that it's like, use your imagination. We can all do something different with this.
Do you guys ever request ideas from the audience that you engage with, or kind of crowdsource the ideas? Because we do have this great diversity of context and ecosystems and people dreaming up new ways to work with climate change, work with the earth through this.
Totally. Yeah. Right now we're actually asking our community to submit their story, a 1 minute story or a short little blog post and picture. And yeah, just to share, like, how you work with nature, or what inspires you about your work, or if you're into land restoration, what you're doing with that. Yeah, and people can submit them on our website, or just send us an email at info@kissthegrounds.com. com.
Very cool.
Cool. So all y'all get out your little phones and go record a video and share with the world how you are connected. What is your connection with nature, with the ground, with the earth? Yeah. Go check them out on kisstheground.com. And we'll have that in our show notes.
I love that you guys are taking both a really practical, literally down to earth approach, and also this high vibe idea of, you know what, if you go spend 10 minutes in nature and you feel better and you're able to channel that energy in your interactions throughout the day, that's a positive contribution. So listeners, when you make your video, remember there's a really broad range of ways to make a positive impact.
Totally. Totally. Totally.
I have some questions about composting. You guys have a really awesome video on the Kiss the Ground website. It's like a 4-minute video that is kind of a primer on how carbon gets into the soil, how our farming practices and our energy use have taken carbon out of the soil and put it into the air, and how we can work to fix carbon in soil. And one of the really neat things that's mentioned in this video is that using a layer of compost on land prior to or in conjunction with sequestering carbon there, so putting seeds in the ground, growing plants that then take up the carbon in the air and fix it into the ground, using a layer of compost can start this positive feedback loop. And you only have to do it one time. And it has a building positive effect that cycles back and back and back again. So that's kind of magical, right?
Yeah. So kind of on a baseline level, I think food and compost are the ways every single day we interact with soil, even if we aren't thinking about it or we're not present to it. But certainly everything we eat, unless it was created in a factory, which some of our food is, but most things that we eat came from soil. And then if we're not composting it, if we're not returning that excess food waste back to the soil, we're not completing the full cycle. And compost it's food for our food. That's my favorite little tagline, because it really is. It's a cycle. Everything in nature, there's no waste in nature. Everything that gets decomposed gets eaten by something and fertilizes something else. And, you know, I think humans are the only animal on the planet that I've seen that don't always participate in that system. And, you know, it's really simple to put green and brown together and, you know, start a little compost in your yard. You can even, I've lived in apartments and I've had worm bins and cared for worms. And if you do it right and follow super simple YouTube videos,
it's not stinky.
It's not stinky. It's
really that's right. And that's cool for, you know, you're mentioning you've lived in apartments. So, and I know there are some citywide systems, like cities that participate in and have built composting systems. What are some of the cities we can look to as models?
Yeah, I think San Francisco has the best model for waste collection right now. They went for it, and they have a really incredible composting system. The majority of their compost goes back out to farmland surrounding the city. They even employed people to come do audits of everyone's bins. So,
oh my God, the compo-po.
Yeah.
That's Natalie Ross is the original compo-po, but when she taught us all about composting, because Natalie's got a degree in soil science. And so she converted the whole family. And I'm glad to hear that San Francisco actually has created these jobs. So they have people come out and audit the compost?
They audit all the bins, apparently. So they'll come to your house and they'll check out what's in your black bin, your recycling bin, and your compost bin. And then they'll leave you a friendly note sharing like, oh, hey, next time this one actually goes in this bin. Thanks. And yeah, it seems to be working really well. And it's something that cities can look to. Certainly San Francisco is a much smaller city. In LA, you know, we're a city of 55 cities. And so it's pretty crazy to look at composting in LA. But for the first time, Los Angeles has an Office of Sustainability, and we're looking at composting, and we already have some composting programs in place. So it's exciting. The cool thing about composting too is there's a really awesome project in Northern California called the Marin Compost Project, and they are doing research with compost application on rangeland, where they're finding that there is great soil carbon sequestration by applying a thin layer of compost and then grazing animals, that they're finding that that really kickstarts the system in a beautiful way in a dry environment, because California is in a severe drought. I don't know if you've heard, but
that's so.
But they're doing really incredible research. So
that's cool. And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was just sharing to check it out. It's the Marin Carbon Project.
That kind of positive feedback loop is what is so magical to me. Like, you do something once and it has this returning cycle of positive benefits.
I mean, it's a real investment. That's like that, yeah. with compound growth. I mean, there you go.
An investment in the soil is a real investment. Wow.
Totally.
and like where I live in Durham, North Carolina, we have a you can actually, I guess, subscribe to
a private compost.
A compost service. And you just have bins, and you can compost everything from, like, if you make bone broth, you can compost the bones, you can compost pizza boxes, you can compost like everything. So even though I compost at home in my backyard, we compost literally everything else that I don't want to put in the backyard through our subscription service. And then they bring us like finished, completed compost whenever we want. It's crazy. I'm like, oh, everyone should do this.
Yeah. And the other, so you get finished, completed compost, which is amazing for your garden, and you create so much less trash.
Yes.
When you're using a composting system like that, you'll find yourself taking your trash out like half as often or even less as you would on a normal system.
And your trash doesn't stink.
Well, normal.
Yeah, it's really exciting. You know, again, back to the hopeful piece, or like the personal responsibility piece. It's exciting to see cities take this on, but it's exciting also to see individuals take it on. In LA, we have a small group called LA Compost, and they pick up compost in different neighborhoods on bicycles and then compost it, you know, within a couple miles. So we kind of need everyone. We need this like personal, small ingenuity localized, as well as government stepping up and stepping in. The other thing I want to say about compost is, like, when I first started composting, it was really overwhelming because I wanted to quote unquote do it right.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I feel you.
And like, to anyone who's never composted, just try it, because it's like an art form. It's like, nobody bakes a beautiful loaf of bread the first time, but you'll find your way of doing it. And there's hundreds of ways to compost. There's, you know, biodynamic compost, there's worm composting, there's bacterially dominated compost, there's fungally dominated. I mean, the list goes on. And like, there's a way that you will find that works for you. And yes, you can create scary stuff with compost, but if you create something scary, you just get to recompost it. So it's, you know, just dive in. It's a trial and error type of thing.
Yeah. And I want to speak to that, 'cause that's a really good point. I mean, I might admit right here that my obsession with composting might have propelled me to go deeper and get a master's in soil science, because I just had to know everything. But that didn't help me become a better composter. I'm just going to go out there and admit it. You know, like, it just really takes doing it. That's like, just do it. Just be willing to mess, quote unquote, mess up, whatever. It's fun. Yeah. It's like a game. It's like, it is an art form.
Totally. Yeah. And in our world of screens where you can press Control Z on most things, it's so nice to get out there and get your hands dirty and engage in a process where you try, you fail, you try again. Because to me, like most of the things in my life that have mattered or have been really rewarding have evolved that kind of hands-on failure and play.
Totally. Yeah. And this is a way oversimplification, but very basically, if you were to put 50% brown material and 50% green material and keep it pretty moist, you would at some point have compost.
So for people who might not know, greens are, for instance, vegetable, like, you know, celery, lettuces, not just green stuff, but mostly kind of wet stuff.
Right, not organic, not dried
out. Soil scientists.
Okay.
Whereas browns are like dry leaves,
right.
Dry grass.
Right. And if you want to get real into it, it's like the greens would be things that, the browns would be like more carbon dominant, like, you know, like dried leaves, like you said, like straw. But then the greens don't have to be a green color, but it's like it is like you said, it's like the vegetable trimmings from whatever you're cooking that night, like the stuff that's still almost, you know, it like looks alive, you know, like fresh grass clippings,
apple cores, kiwi peels,
right? Because that still has the nitrogen, and nitrogen is actually a really I guess I'll call it an active element, because it can transform into different forms very quickly versus carbon sticks around a little longer. So like your fresh vegetables that you just trim, although like the carrot butts and whatever, is like they're gonna have some nitrogen in there, but in a few days or weeks, most of that nitrogen is going to be transformed, whereas the carbon is still going to be there. And that's what all those microbes and worms and all those little creatures are working to like break that down and make it reavailable. And, you know, of course, there's still nutrients and other nutrients, but they're breaking it down over time to turn it back into soil. So it's like the quote unquote greens are the things that are not dry. I mean, this is where it does get like you can really complicate it, but like you said,
it's so funny because it's so simple. I know it's hard to put into words, but it's just go check it out.
And if this isn't convincing enough, there are all these really cool studies that say if you put your hands in soil, I'm gonna botch this because I'm not a scientist, but there's some sort of microorganism that actually helps elevate your mood and helps fight depression that exists in soil. So if you're not into compost, but you want to be happier, just start putting your hands in healthy soil.
Awesome. And you know what? So here's something. Okay, I'm really, I get really excited about compost. So here's one thing. Like if you want to get really nerdy with it, I feel like I got to share this. At a certain point, when your pile reaches a certain volume, it's about 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet, like a cube, like 3 feet long, wide, and tall, then it's like this critical point where the microorganisms have, they're active enough. They're like breaking down all the stuff. They're actually creating heat, and the heat's getting trapped in the pile. And you can they make compost thermometers that are like 2 feet long, foot and a half, 2 feet long, that you can stick into your pile and you can just watch it. I've been outside on a snowy day and my pile was 150 degrees. And it's just like mind boggling. Wow. It's like, if that's not cool to you, then I don't know what is. Cause that's like,
They're hard at work in there. And how cool is it that those little bacterial factories are putting off that kind of output, that heat and energy.
Right.
Not to mention all these good gases and bioavailable factors in the soil.
Totally. I have to admit that I own a compost thermometer.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Thumbs up. So back to Kiss the Ground and a little bit more about like carbon sequestration and climate change and all this stuff. Cause you know, like composting alone isn't gonna, you know, sequester all the carbon in the world, but it's going to be a part of it.
Yeah. What? So this is something,
go ahead.
This is something we haven't really touched on yet. We talked about the definition of regenerative, but we didn't really talk about on-farm practices that are actually going to make soil healthier or sequester carbon. So in general, and this is like a broad generalization, but in general, when we're talking about soil carbon sequestration, we're talking about cover cropping. So always keeping your soil covered if it's with a different crop in between cash crops, or if it's something that gets grazed, but, you know, always keeping soil covered, utilizing compost, having more of an emphasis on tree crops rather than annual crops, which are things like carrots and lettuce and tomato that we're planting and replanting every season. We're talking about managed grazing. So animals, sheep, goats, cattle, being managed in such a way that they're eating down the grasses or whatever their feed is to a certain point, being kept in kind of tight bunches and then being moved fast to another piece of land so that the land is actually getting all of these animals in one place, getting all their fertility, all their trampling, getting all of their nibbling, but then that grass or whatever the crop is allowed to regrow, and there goes another flush of carbon. And then we're talking about not tilling, which is a big one, because every time we till on large farms, we're cutting into the fungal networks and the really healthy bacteria and fungi in the soil. And so these are like very broad stroke practices. There are probably hundreds that we could talk about. But
something like not tilling is like turning sort of, you know, like for most kids, if they've never had exposure to farming or gardening, they might look at a plot of land outside and say, okay, the first thing we need to do is borrow someone's electric tiller and rip up this grass so we can plant a garden. And the idea that like the structures that already exist in the soil have a complex and immense wisdom can be revolutionary for this generation that we need to educate.
Totally. And then there's, you know, there's, it's kind of a statement that has to be qualified, because if you have a super compacted, like not healthy soil in a city or on a farm, something that's been neglected and is obviously like doesn't have microbes or worms or moisture or anything in it, the first thing you're going to do is till it. But we're going to
add compost.
We're going to do that. We're going to add compost. We're going to add a bunch of, you know, good for the soil things. And then we're going to hopefully never till it again. So, yeah. And it's funny because we have this thought, or at least I had the thought when I first learned about this, like, oh, well, our farm equipment just isn't set up to not till. But the same big tractors, we have the exact same thing, and it's a no-till drill. So, like all over the world, accessible to any farmer who's going to buy a big piece of equipment, they can choose to buy a plow or buy something that just puts these little tiny rips in the soil, plants the seeds, and then moves on. So it's like it's accessible. It's just really getting into the practice of it. And, you know, in industrialized chemical farming, when we've killed all that soil life, then we have to every year till, put on fertilizers, and plant seeds, because we've created like a sterile environment, and then we have to add in all of those synthetic fertilizers. But if we're caring for the soil, then we don't have to do that, because we're creating, again, we're creating the ecology so that what can arise is the ability for food to grow.
Yeah, and I feel like right here we should make it a little... just for our listeners, let them know, like, okay, in conventional agriculture, there's the chemical fertilizers that, you know, and most often it's just nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, NPK. But then in organic farming, the concept is you want living soil that's full of microorganisms and macroorganisms that are going to cycle the nutrients for you, because in the actual particles of soil, there's so many nutrients that are like, some of them are actually connected, like bonded with the soil on different types of bonds, like ionic bonds and stuff. But then there's, you know, there's others that are in the soil water. And so like the microorganisms are actually the ones that are saying, hey, let's take this, I'm going to eat this up and poop it out. And then the plant's like, oh my gosh, awesome. Now I can eat that and like become a, you know, become a squash or whatever. And so the whole idea behind organic farming is let's let that ecosystem, as you've said, Lauren, let's let that ecosystem and ecology do the work for us. And we can add inputs organically, like, you know, compost,
a layer of compost,
right, compost and like animal wastes and you know, whatever that was once living and is now dead and has nutrients to be returned to the earth. And so in that conventional type of agriculture, oftentimes the very chemicals that they use, the very fertilizers that they use and herbicides and pesticides can actually kill off the microorganisms. And you'll never completely kill them all, but it will create a system that cannot support itself anymore. It's like becomes dependent on those fertilizers. And that just takes us down a whole rabbit hole. I feel like we could have like months of podcasts about that.
Absolutely.
But totally. just for a little like tiny primer on what organic and conventional, what's going on there and why it's so important to think about the soil when we think about these things. And then, so absolutely. Lauren, can you tell us more about like focusing on the soil life and like what, why else is it so important to focus on creating healthy living organic soil? And like, you know, what are some thoughts on that?
Totally. Yeah, I want to make a distinction first, which is when the organic certification was first born, it had a really big focus on soil health and its importance. And unfortunately, over time, what we're seeing are more and more fertilizers and pesticides being okayed and brought into the certification as okay. And so there's kind of this need for something else to emerge, which is the idea behind regenerative. And if you look at the organic movement, the leaders of the organic movement are now calling for something called organic 3.0. And there's some really, really beautiful white papers out there that describe how to take the organic standard from where it is now to kind of its next evolution, which would be looking at soil life as the key indicator of health and looking at soil health as kind of king. Like if we focus on that primarily, then everything else will follow. So unfortunately, right now it's possible to buy organic food that comes from a certified organic farm that isn't really taking care of the soil. They're just doing the bare minimum to get the certification. So unfortunately, that's a possible reality. But yeah, soil health, it's like the more I learn about it, when I first got inspired about healthy soil, I was like, oh, this is a rabbit hole that I can follow for the rest of my life. Like, this is super cool. It's kind of like when you know you found your calling or like the thing you're supposed to be focusing on, because you're like, and that's awesome. Like, it's not overwhelming. You're excited to continually learn. But on a very base level, you know, soil is alive and it has billions of bacteria and fungi. And we're just now kind of discovering the life in the soil. There are some really incredible researchers and there's some really incredible science, but I think there's also a lot we still don't know about it. But what we do know is that when soil is healthy, that's where the nutrition for the plant comes from. So bacteria and fungi, they actually work together to mine the nutrients that the plant needs. And it's like a whole conversation, which is just unbelievably beautiful. And then healthy soil, when it's healthy, it can store water for a lot longer. If you think of pouring a glass of water on a table, that would be like pouring rain on a conventional farm. It's just going to roll right off. But if you were to put a really thick towel on the table and pour that same glass of water, that would be the analogy for rain on a farm that has healthy soil life. So soil can kind of act like a sponge.
And you all have a great video on your Facebook page that I think, I don't remember his name. One of your guys did that. He took the high organic matter, healthy soil, and then the low organic matter compacted soil and poured water on them and let them sit. And like hours later, I mean, instantly you could see the difference, but then hours later you could still see this like dramatic difference. And it's just unbelievable. I invite the listeners together. I'll actually, let me make a note and I'll put a link there.
And that has positive repercussions in a lot of ways. One of them is the better water filtration and the health of our watersheds and the quality of the runoff that's coming from farms and going into the ocean. And what are some other ways that that has a positive impact on the environment? Like, does this tie into the drought resistance?
Totally. Yeah. So healthy soil is kind of our key to fighting drought, as is biodiversity, because the more trees and bushes and plants and animals we can get in one area, the more that whole ecosystem can hold the moisture. There's one other thing I really want to touch on with healthy soil, though. And this blew my mind when I understood this distinction. But when we talk about food chains, like if I think back to second grade, when it's like, oh, a food chain, big thing eats little thing. The soil life is the very, like, bacteria and fungi are the very bottom of our food chain. And if we're to look at our current environment, everything is suffering. We have, you know, an imbalanced climate. We have trees dying. We have polar ice caps melting. We have unhealthy food everywhere. We have huge species loss. Like, you know, there's endangered list is crazy, and the bees are suffering, and, you know, there's so much going on. But if we were to just address the very bottom of the food chain, so much would be solved. It's like, if we can get diversity back at the very basis of the food chain and the bacteria and the fungi in the soil, then the plants are healthier. And then the animals that eat the plants are healthier. And then,
including the human animals.
Yeah. And then the humans are healthier. And then we actually have this relationship with the carbon in the atmosphere. And then when soil is healthy, it's storing the carbon. And it's like, the list goes on and on and on. But if we were to just get one thing, and that's that healthy soil is the bottom of our food chain, and if we were to care for it in such a different way through that lens or that view, I think so much would change in this world for the positive.
It's funny, because when you said that, I saw the image of healthy soil, like the bacteria and the fungi are actually the top of our food chain, because I see them, you know, eating the humans, eating the plant matter, eating everything that goes into the ground. And that brought to mind something that you two had touched on earlier in our conversation. This mentality is not really straight lines. It's all about cycles.
Totally.
Totally. Lauren, as people put, you know, as this episode ends and they go about their lives and they're sitting back at their computers from whatever they've been doing, how can they find you? And what do you recommend they look at first when they connect with y'all?
Awesome. Yeah, all of our social, we're on everything, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We're all of the handles are at Kiss the Ground CA for California. And then you can sign up for our email list, which is on our website, kisstheground.com. But kind of the first thing I would suggest is going and taking 4 minutes and watching the piece that we developed called The Soil Story. It's online on our website, and the easiest way to find it is just to Google The Soil Story. But it's a piece that took us actually a year to create 4 minutes, but it's an animated piece on how the carbon cycle works, and how regenerative agriculture can balance the climate. And it represents a lot of deep work with scientists and experts, and it built a lot of consensus in the field, which is how it took us so long to create, but also why I think it's such a good, simple explanation.
Yeah, it's a beautiful video, and it takes a lot more time to say something clearly sometimes than to throw a lot of unnecessary information at people. So well done.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great video.
Well, thanks so much for having me on today. And yeah, if there's like one thing to be left with, it's like, just do something. Like, we all can do something in this space, and whether it's taking a walk or putting your hands in the dirt for the first time, or growing a basil plant on your windowsill, or becoming a farmer. Like, there's so much to uncover here. And I think that anyone who starts participating a little more with the soil, you know, find something, whether it's peace or calm or a career or a healthier lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And
yeah.
And we so look forward to talking to you again, especially when your movie comes out. So I'm sure we'll be having more fun conversations about soil and getting to nerd out. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your day and to come share what you guys are doing, because it's so amazing. And listeners, please, please, please go check out that video, because it's really, really cool. She said it took a year. I can tell, because it's really good. It's a very, very fun, entertaining, and informative little video. Watch it.
Thank you so much, Lauren. And thank you, Kiss the Ground, for doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Lizzie and Natalie. It was great to speak with you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope this conversation has inspired you to go connect with the soil and to perhaps start composting, or to go to a local community garden and start learning about how to grow things or doing some community composting. If this did inspire you, let us know. Reach out and let us know. And I want to remind you that you can get really fun, awesome lessons and rituals and guided meditations every month over at patreon.com/dreamfreedombeauty. I also want to share something else with you all. If you have been feeling like it's a little bit intense this holiday season, and with the whole societal climate deal going on, then I want to offer you something to help you move through this time with grace and ease, and with true transformation that is aligned with revealing and living your truth. And I do this through clairvoyant sessions, where I will look into your energy and patterns, and by looking into them, we can identify information that's really helpful for you to move forward in integrity and in love and peace and in truth. And we can also do work energetically to shift patterns and programs that are keeping you stuck or keeping you blocked or limited or hindered. And so I really want to offer this to you. This is something that I've only done with my monthly coaching clients. So if you are not wanting to do monthly coaching, but you do want some support like this, then now's your chance. It's super fun to do these sessions. If you've ever had a psychic reading, it's similar. It's, I'm actually journeying into your energetic field and looking at what most needs attention and shifting now. And I can't even describe it. It's just so much love pours in and things shift so that you can open up to what you truly are, which at its core is love. So if you're interested in that, I invite you to check out the different sessions that I'm offering over at dreamfreedombeauty.com/sessions. And it would be my utmost joy to serve you and to support you, especially through the holiday season, which I know can be really intense. And, you know, in the face of seeing family and of consumerism, and especially with our shifting political climate. So I have a non-judgmental approach to this. I'm not going to judge you for any of this stuff that shows up. This is all about helping you shift into your truth and allowing you to embody and express your beauty
with grace and ease and love and joy and flow. So if you're interested in these, again, that is dreamfreedombeauty.com/sessions. And until now, this has only been offered to my monthly clients, my monthly coaching clients. So go ahead and check it out. And I look forward to speaking with you. Until next time, many blessings.